Hey, guess what, Dan?
What, Paul?
We have a guest today.
We do. That's only the second time in history we've ever had a guest, and this one actually has cachet.
Mm-hmm. Omar Rauji joining us all the way from the great land of Toronto today.
Hello.
There you go.
Toronto, yep. So your last guest didn't have cachet?
Ah, he's just a buddy of mine who's we had him on for
it was some random off the street.
Yeah, no, he's a good friend of mine that was on doing some college and NFL stuff because neither Paul nor I is a big football guy. But yeah, it's good to have you on. Omar, you can follow Omar at Omar Canuck on Twitter. We're having him here to talk a bit of NHL, a bit of Canucks naturally. And then a bit of French Open as well, because he's a big tennis guy, too, apparently.
Yeah, I do love the tennis, definitely.
Right on.
I don't know about this cachet, though. I don't know.
Well, I mean,
nervous about it.
You have more Twitter followers than Paul and I combined times four, so we're going to count that as cachet. So, well, we'll get it started then. Paul and Omar, we're going to start, as we always do, talking about the NHL and talking about the game last night. And I didn't have a chance to watch it because it's on at like 2 a.m. my time when I'm over here in Edinburgh. So I'm not going to stay up for these things. But I watched the highlights. And from reading the Twitters of guys like Ray Ferraro, Greg Wyshynski, Elliot Friedman, all of them calling it one of the, if not the, most exciting games of the playoffs thus far this season. Is that something you'd agree with? I mean, it looked like an exciting game from the highlights.
Man, that game was intense. Yeah, that was good. Honestly, if you're a hockey fan, how are you not a fan of the Chicago Blackhawks? I mean, I know we're supposed to hate them as Canucks fans, but geez, so much skill, and they're just so awesome, right?
Yeah,
oh, for sure.
Chicago extending to a sixth game. Hanz was with his first ever postseason goal.
What?
And Pat Kane finally shows up with four assists.
Hold on, backtrack. That's Michael Hanz's first ever playoff goal?
That's what I read.
Yeah, it's a hell of a way to get off the schneid, then.
For a 216-year-old, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I know. I thought, yeah, Pat Kane, I mean, we were griefing him last podcast. He got four assists last night. But I thought, from what I saw, the best player on the ice looked to be Brandon Saad.
I don't know. I think it's Pat Kane, man.
Yeah?
When I watch, there's like two of the shiftiest players in the league are Pat Kane and Pavel Datsyuk. I wouldn't, if I was a goalie, I wouldn't want to be facing either of those guys. And if I'm a fan, those are the two guys I always want to watch. When they have the puck, they're just magical. And, you know, I mean, Pat Kane hasn't done much on the scoreboard lately, but you know, he's always creating. He's always there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
If you're the other team, you have to watch out for that guy.
Pat Kane more so of a factor, more of a weapon than Patrick Sharp?
I think whenever he's on the ice, everyone just backs off. Like, they don't know what to do because he's coming at you at lightning speed. He's twisting and turning, and you just don't know what to do. Like, he
Those
was on
hands.
The ice for that last goal. He didn't create it, really. He made the pass, but they're still watching him, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, for sure.
A factor that people aren't really paying attention to in this series is the lack of goaltending in the series. Corey Crawford has a save percentage of 88%. Jonathan Quick at 89%. Is that goalies underperforming, or is that just a lot of scoring, a lot of weapons in the series?
Did you think it was underperforming? When I was watching the overtime yesterday, I mean, they were amazing.
The overtime was different.
The
series, all six games, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess there have been goals getting past them, but there are some really good players on these teams, so mm-hmm. I don't know if you can say that it's bad goaltending. Jonathan Quick is obviously just a notch better than Crawford, but, mm-hmm. you know, like, they're both good enough to win a cup, and they make key saves at key times. That save on Gabrick in overtime by Crawford, I mean,
yeah.
holy crap, right?
Yeah.
Let's
talk Gabrick for a second. 11 goals in 41 regular season games. He has 11 goals now in 19 playoff games. Does he make, I don't know, more than $13 million on his next paycheck?
You know, if he keeps, like, making mistakes like he did on that second goal yesterday where he, like, completely missed the puck and it fooled Crawford and goes under him. Yeah, maybe. That was a lucky goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, I guess he's good as a role player, right? I don't know.
Is that the
best?
Yeah,
well, he's good with Kopitar at his center. I agree with you fully.
Yeah.
And Paul, I mean, If you're looking at Gabrick, I remember when they got him at the trade deadline, he was kind of an under the radar pickup. I have no idea who they even traded to Columbus for him, but he's turned out to be easily the best trade deadline acquisition of the year, I think.
I think they traded one of the models from Sunset Boulevard.
It's possible.
That was
it's
it.
Possible. A cutout, a cardboard cutout. And like
I was just going to say, they're just the masters of making those deadline deals, aren't they?
Yes, they definitely
are.
They
pick up key players for their Stanley Cup run every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Carter in 2012, yeah. Right? That was the big one. And then, I guess this year, Gabrick. I don't think that in 2012, did they supplement their decor with any moves? I don't think so. Willie Mitchell was already on that team. But, regardless, Dean Lombardi knows what he's doing.
As long as they have Drew Doughty, they don't have to worry about their D.
That's true. Very, very true. Moving on, Habs-Rangers. This is a series that has had more twists and turns than an old M. Night Shyamalan movie, because his new movies just generally suck. There's a lot of bad blood in that series, too. I mean, there's something about Derek Dorsett and the whole headbutting thing with Mike Weaver at the end of the game there in Game 5. I mean, you have Prest and Stepan and the carryover from that. Has this been as exciting a series for you guys as Kings Hawks, and why or why not?
Go ahead.
Well, for me, it's the Canadian teams, right? So that's our number one focus. And I think for Canada, it is like that. You know, you have PK Subban doing his thing out there. So, you know, that alone makes it exciting. And the fact that Carey Price went down early, I mean, yeah, it's been a great series, honestly. I think it's just fun hockey to watch.
Yeah, Tokarski made some timely saves, stayed mentally strong, I think, most impressively, after letting a 3-goal lead slip away. How much of a decision on the other side do you think AV should have put Lundqvist back in to start the third?
I think he should have, but, you know, it apparently it didn't even cross his mind, you know, from the press conference after and stuff like that. So, I mean, whatever. It's over. He pulled him, and now Lundqvist is going to come back huge in the next game. I mean, he's always had a luxury of having an A-plus goalie, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I can't see New York playing worse than they did in Game 5.
No.
Especially Lundqvist, too.
Well, and you have to remember Lundqvist, how he ends up playing in these elimination games. I mean, he's the Justin Williams of goaltenders in Game 7, if you look at his stats. But, I mean, I guess we'll have to see in Game 6, and that kind of is a good transition into the big question, which is, can either of these teams, Omar, that are down 3-2, the Habs and the Hawks, can you see either of them conceivably forcing a Game 7 and, to that end, winning a Game 7?
I would I'll call the Hawks for that, Game 7.
Yeah?
Montreal, I think Montreal is going down. I think Lundqvist is going to step up. He's gonna have an amazing bounce-back game, and Avey's just going to release the Hounds. And, you know, I mean, Montreal's lucky to have made it this far. You can't say the same for Chicago. They're not lucky to have made it this far. They're actually unlucky that they're down in the series, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Yeah.
I mean, they have been outplayed by LA, but they have the skill and everything it takes to come back in this series and win it. So what do you guys think?
Well, Dan used my money to bet New York Rangers in 6, so.
So I love using your money, Paul. I mean, that way I win either way.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. I didn't eat lunch all last week.
I'm sorry.
So I think the Rangers take it tonight. I thought the Hawks would win the series, so I'm not going to – I bet the Hawks to win the Cup, so I'm not going to change now. I think Hawks somehow inconceivably go into L.A. and win Game 6 and then eventually Game 7. Are you still on the Habs bandwagon, Dan?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, to answer your question about the money, it's not my fault that you bet against the Blue Jays, all right? You need to be smarter than that. And secondly, the Habs bandwagon, no, man. I mean, look, in terms of forward depth, I've kind of looked at the Habs as during the Bruins series, they had guys like Dale Weiss and who else? Renny Bork and, well, Vanek was playing better in that series than he is now. He's Hollow Man in this series. Their kind of secondary scoring options were creating so much more than they've been creating in this series against the Rangers. And be that because they lack confidence without Price, I don't know. But to me, the Rangers, Carl Hagelin is a guy that I look at as being the MVP of this series for them. But you also got to look at Stepan. Chris Kreider because, I mean, he doesn't know how to stay on his own 2 feet. Lots of guys on the Rangers who I look at as MVPs from that team. So, no, I look at the Rangers as being able to finish it tonight. And if they do finish it tonight, Bet365 has them on the money line at 1.57. So, not very long odds to win tonight. They're favored pretty heavily.
Yeah, lost in the 7-4 debacle is that Stepan came back from a broken jaw and scored 2 goals.
That's true.
So, there you go. Let's all put on our Homer caps.
All right.
Talk some Vancouver Canucks.
It seems appropriate.
Let's get your thoughts, Omar. Let's get your thoughts on Jim Benning, first off.
Okay, Jim Benning. I think the Canucks have a Christmas present under the tree right now. They have a shiny new Christmas present. It has new wrapping on it, but what's really inside it? You know, when I was listening to his
socks.
It might be. Or it might just be the same old present that they had last year and the year before. Because when I was listening to his press conference last week, what did he say? He said, I want an up-tempo team. I want a puck possession team. I think that the core of this team is still good. They still have a lot left. And we're going to try to supplement them with other players and make them better. Isn't that exactly what Mike Gillis was saying last year at the end of the year? And what he said pretty much all along. It's nothing new, right?
Yeah, it sounds like the same old story. It's true.
I think, in terms of on-ice, like, you know, performance will get better, okay? But in terms of their vision, it's the same thing. And if we had kept Gillis, you would be probably getting a very similar product this year if he had been able to get the owners to do what he wanted instead of, you know, having to capitulate to their wishes. The fact, you know, that I'm mentioning the shiny present, that is actually a big thing for this team because Trevor Linden is that present, right? He is, like, he
Lord
is...
Lord Linden.
Yeah. As president, he's a different animal than Gillis was as president, right? Gillis, I mean, when it comes to media, Gillis hated it, right? He just hated it. And half the time when he would do an interview or something, it would make him look worse than when he started.
Oh, my God. I remember back to that Matt Sicaris and Blake Price interview. I can't remember when. I think it was in February, the end of February at some point, where it was, you could feel the awkward over the radio. Oh, my goodness. Did you hear that one? Where every answer was, yes, Blake. That's what I was talking about.
When I think of Mike Gillis in the media, I think back to when he told the Moj, or he asked the Moj who he was and if he was the guy eating the hot dogs in the press box. Like, you're exactly right, Omar. He didn't know what he thought. He was too smart, and that was Gillis's MO.
Yeah, and he hated doing it, and he didn't want to do it, right? Whereas now you have Trevor Linden, who does a town hall every week, right? He's doing some town hall for the fans, and then when they have a press conference, he's on the radio before, and he's on the radio after. Like, he loves it. He just loves the media stuff. It's his job to sell stuff, right? And, I mean, he loves, like, he can just smile and everyone melts, right? Like, I melt, you know?
Aw.
It's that winning smile.
The guy is just full of charisma, and he's selling, like, he is selling the product. And, I mean, it's a smart move that the ownership has done. You know, even if the product is the same thing, that they've brought in this new president. The other thing that I think these guys will do differently, though, is they're going to obviously get a better head coach. Both of them have seen what a diabolical effect John Tortorella had on this team.
Yeah.
And they're both, like, past players. They have a very good understanding of the kind of coach that will work, right? That can get the best out of their players and stuff like that. So they're going to get a guy who can communicate, who has a good rapport with players, who understands that every player is different, who involves, you know, every single player on the team, all things that John Tortorella was just incapable of, apparently.
A coach who will live closer than Point Roberts.
Yeah, that too, and doesn't drive home instead of going to practices.
Ridiculous.
So who do you have as front runners right now?
Yeah, the coach. It has to be between John Stevens and Willie Desjardins, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
They both seem like they, like, from, you know, I've just read about them, but from reading about them and learning about them, it seems like they're both really good player development guys. John Steven is the guy who's credited with developing Drew Doughty in LA and the whole defensive core. And then this Desjardins, he was working under Glenn Gullitson in Dallas. So how funny would it be that he would come here and take over as a head coach, and Gully would be the assistant this time?
Oh, hopefully, yeah, at least he doesn't have to run the power play anymore. That's all we can hope for.
One guy that Paul was trying to put forward the other day that I kind of shot down pretty quickly, but apparently is in the news right now as a possible candidate, is Adam Oates. And I don't know, Omar, what you think about Adam Oates, but I think that, I mean, if you want to bring him on to coach your power play, that's fantastic. But if you want to bring him on to do other things, like, say, play a third or a fourth line more than 5 minutes a game, that'd be a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think he would be a good guy for player development and player rapport, so maybe an assistant coach.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give him the full reins to the team, but, you know, I haven't studied Adam Oates and what he did, you know, well enough to say that.
Yeah. No, it was in Elliot Freeman's 30 Thoughts, and I was like, oh, that's kind of intriguing.
Yeah, I saw that.
Let's quickly go over to some pending transactions, potential transactions. What's going to happen with Ryan Kesler?
Well, first of all, Benning's saying exactly the same thing Gillis was saying on that too, right? He wants to build around Kesler. He thinks he's a good player. And honestly, why shouldn't he? Because Kesler, I agree with it. Kesler is a beast, right? If you get him to the playoffs and he's still marginally healthy, he's that guy who's a difference maker, right?
Yeah.
He's like our Patrick Kane, the guy who steps up and he will just make a difference. You got to have that in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Oh, like definitely. When the Sedins are, you know, not scoring, and when, you know, our other skilled players are doing nothing, that's when Kesler will just step up and grab everyone and just say, okay, screw it, I'm doing this alone.
Yeah. My friend and I were talking last night, the best second line centers in the league, and we got top two, Malkin and Kesler, I think.
Patrice Bergeron, you got to think. Though,
oh, too. David Krejci or Bergeron, whoever's playing second line there, is up there as well. But, I mean, Kesler, when you're thinking top second line centers in the league, he's up there, at least top five, if not three.
Definitely, yeah. And, I mean, in the playoffs, he's a first line. He's really their first center, right? He takes all the key faceoffs, and he's, you know, he's going to be on the ice when they need goals and stuff. So, second line center doesn't even do him justice, really.
That's true. That's true.
Now, quickly, your thoughts on the draft? I mean, we're looking at six, and for some of the guys that I've been looking at, talking about guys who are hovering around the 5 to 10 rankings, like Michael Dalcol, Michael Nylander, Ehlers. Do you have a particular guy that you think the Canucks would benefit more from? I mean, there's Vertanen too, the kid from Abbotsford, but he just had shoulder surgery, so he'd be a more iffy pick.
You know what? I'm going to leave this discussion to you guys because I haven't studied it enough. And
okay.
Don't ask me questions that I don't know the answers to.
Fair enough. I can appreciate that. I look at a guy like Ehlers or Nylander, two high-skilled European guys, as maybe guys who wouldn't fit the mold for Benning, but guys that were kind of lacking right now. I mean, we have big forwards on the horizon, guys like Gaunce and Horvat and Cassie, and guys who are younger prospects. We could use a solid, skilled European winger.
Right. Well, how's this for a draft question, Omar? Do you think the Canucks should use this draft to try and go for the number one pick or a number one or two pick, I would say, or should they just keep their pick?
No, you're asking if they should try to trade up?
Yeah.
I think let's see what Jim Benning has for that number six pick. He's this, you know, well, highly touted scout. He knows what he's doing in that regard. He should be able to perform better than other people in that spot. So I think stick with it and draft something good at six.
There you go.
Should be able to get something.
Oh, yeah.
Should be. Teams usually do, like the Flames drafted Monahan in that spot last year. So there's guys that you can get at six that'll be impact players.
Definitely. Let's go from the ice to the clay. My favorite. Let's talk some French Open. More importantly, let's talk Eugenie Bouchard, but we'll talk French Open as well.
Oh, we always do.
Thoughts of the first couple days here, Omar? I mean, you got the two winners of the Australian Open, both out in the first round.
Yeah, it's crazy, actually. Women's tennis is crazy, isn't it? I mean, you never know what's going to happen. The top seeds never, I mean, You just never know. It's, I hate women's tennis. Sorry. It's just so unpredictable. But I'm going to say something. I think Eugenie Bouchard is going to win a major before Milos Raonic does.
Good call. Good call.
And I think she's going to make it to number one in the world. And I think she's going to win many majors.
Really? Yeah, that was a question I had for you later, literally.
Sorry to ruin
Bouchard. No, it's fine. Bouchard or Raonic first. And I agreed. I picked Bouchard versus Li Na at the end of this one. And with Serena out, Bouchard has got a chance here.
Look, I was looking at the draw, and Bouchard's half of the draw is hell. Okay, she has to go through... She has to go through Angelique Kerber in round four. Then she's got a quarterfinal of Aguirre Wanska. Oh. If she gets through that, her semifinal is Maria Sharapova, probably. They're half of the draw.
Who is the odds-on favorite now? I think Sharapova's probably
Sharapova's the odds-on favorite. Bouchard is sixth.
Do you know who the top seed in the other half is? It's Simona Halep. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, I think that's the lady that washes my windows every Sunday.
That's right. It's just so if she gets through this half of the draw, she's gold, I guess. But honestly, I think she has a game. She has an amazing game. We know that, right? But she has something that, you know, every real tennis contender needs, and that's her mental strength. Right?
I was gonna say her beauty, but that works too.
You don't need that.
Paul, this is not the misogyny podcast now. Come on, treat them all equally.
Okay, fine. No, yeah. She's very talented.
I like how you keep us honest on the misogyny thing.
Just trying, all right? It's in the news right now. It's all over my Twitter. I gotta stick with all four of the women who listen to our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. If we have any women followers, we don't want to alienate them, right?
That's okay. Exactly. Well, I think Paul's mom listens every once in a while. So.
She's a quarter of them.
That's right. Okay, well, that's fair on the women's side. On the men's side, I mean, Wawrinka was the big surprise drop in the first round. But other than that, I mean, I know Nadal won pretty easily today. My boy Federer seems to be in decent form from the first couple rounds. Andy Murray, I know, is doing well. I was watching Murray's obviously a big deal out here. I was watching his match the other day. Has anyone surprised you in the men's draw? Or has it been about what you expected?
Yeah, nothing too surprising. I am surprised by Wawrinka going out early because I think now that we've seen him scale the mountain, it remains to be seen whether he's the kind of guy who wants to remain at the top or does he, you know, now that he got his major, is he just happy and ready to retire, right? You know, is he a real champion or is he just, you know, one and done? But, I mean, it would be great to see him at the top because he's a good player. He can beat the big guys, you know, the big three guys. He's one guy who can actually compete with them because he has the game to do that.
Yeah.
And it would be great to see him stay at the top. But other than that, I mean, look, there's only one thing. When I watch a major these days, there's one thing I want to see, and that's Rafa and Djokovic play in the finals because to me, that's the number one, like, that's the best sports rivalry in the world right now. And they bring, they just bring the best out of each other. They bring the best out of this sport. You know, they have 30-shot rallies, you know, every other rally, they're hitting these crazy rallies that just go back and forth and back and forth. And they're just pushing each other around. And just when you think one is beaten in, like, in the worst defensive position, that's when he hits this winner, like, some crazy shot that you never could have predicted, right?
Yeah,
and it's just insane stuff. Like it brings me like out of my chair when I watch it over and over again.
Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry, Paul. I was just going to ask you then on that kind of in that vein. Would you say then that the better rivalry in terms of like in their prime competition one versus one is Djokovic Nadal right now or Nadal Federer back like 5 years ago?
Well, I mean, I definitely know the answer, my answer to that. I ask you this question. With Nadal, who is his, like, who has been his number one rival? Well, first, Federer. Who is his number one rival in tennis?
Federer's?
Yeah.
I would assume it would be Nadal.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah.
But, and when it was, Nadal was, you know, Nadal was 18 years old when Federer was like 23 or something, right? Like, he was That's in his crazy. Prime and Nadal was 18 and he was his number one rival.
It's crazy.
Nadal on the other side, who's his number one rival? I mean, he has you know, three, right? Maybe like two. Like
Federer and Djokovic, yeah.
And for a short time, Murray, but Murray's more like Federer's rival, I think, than Nadal's.
Yeah. No, I think, look, for both Nadal and Djokovic, their peak, their highest level of tennis is higher than anything Federer has ever done. And this isn't meant as an insult to Federer, because Federer did something amazing, is that he stayed at his top level for years. Like, so consistent. You know, these other guys have not been able to stay at that top level for that long, right? Federer did, and he just stood there, and he'd take the punches, and he'd stay there for five sets, and, you know, people would try to knock him off, and he would just stand there. Like, he wouldn't be sweating. He would just stand there, return the ball. Okay, I'm winning this championship. And it was an amazing thing to see. But Djokovic and Nadal, they play a different level of tennis, right? Like, they have more power, more speed. They cover the court better. And, I mean, you know, at the top of their games, and Andy Murray, they would beat Federer at his best. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all have, yeah.
So on when it's that close, Nadal and Djokovic, does the advantage go to Nadal in this because it's on clay?
You know, Djokovic is the favorite in this tournament by the bookies, right?
Yeah, he's at 2.2 to win it, and Nadal's at 2.25. Yeah, yeah. It's slight, but he is the favorite, and he has been.
Is that a change from the beginning, Paul?
The beginning, I remember when we were talking about it, we were surprised because Nadal was second, and it was by more of a margin, but it wasn't that much. I feel like it was Djokovic at 2.2, Nadal at 2.4 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's been the favorite since the beginning of this tournament. It's based, I guess, on the past couple of tournaments where Nadal hasn't been quite as dominant. He's not looking quite as confident as usual, which is a very good sign that, you know, his game isn't quite as good as it, you know, has been in the past. And Djokovic, I mean, look, this is Djokovic's best chance to take this ever in his life. Still, I think, because it's a five setter, I think Nadal will make the adjustments in time. Djokovic will push him around. I bet you Djokovic comes out and takes that second set, because Nadal always starts hot. He'll come out to like a 2-0 or 3-0 lead in the first set, and then Djokovic will start taking over the game. And then we see how quickly Nadal will react and respond. In the U.S. Open last year, Nadal, he was able to make that adjustment. The problem he has with Djokovic is that when Djokovic returns it, it lands on the baseline behind him, right? Nadal has his momentum going in towards the court, and Djokovic somehow every single time he hits a rocket reply and it lands on the baseline and it's a winner. Mm-hmm. And somehow on the hard courts of the U.S. Open, Nadal responded to that, and he responded in time. Now, he wasn't able to do that on clay a couple weeks ago in Rome, but I think that's an effect of a short two-setter where, you know, Nadal doesn't get a chance to use his endurance that is slightly better than Djokovic's probably, and he doesn't get to use his mind didn't come into it as much. So I think Nadal will take it, but, you know, honestly, if one of them has a five-setter as their semifinal, that and the other one doesn't, that could make the difference. That's how close these two are, you know? Like, it's just a margin that fine.
Interesting. Before we wrap it up on French Open, this is interesting. I've never looked at this.
Can we talk about Milos Raonic, though?
Oh, yeah.
Of course we can.
Let's talk Milos Raonic. He's a 67-1 favorite to win. Would you put any money on him?
No.
No.
No. But he's still playing well.
He's playing well, but I just want to say I hate watching Milos Raonic play tennis.
Like, now, why is that? I'm curious, because I never have fun watching him.
Canada loves watching Milos Raonic because he's a Canadian tennis player. He's bringing everyone into this sport. But, you know, I've been watching tennis my whole life, and Milos Raonic, he's just big. Like, he hits everything big, and he just has to be big. Like, big forehand, huge serve, big volley, and, I mean, when you watch him, you spend more time watching him bounce the ball between serves than actual tennis. That's the problem.
That's true. That's
you watch other players, you get to see a ground game. You get to see shots back and forth. With Raonic, he's just trying to hit a winner every single shot. And it's either he hits the winner or he misses. and then it's the end of the point, and then you're watching him bounce the ball again.
Yeah, Milos feels like he's playing, like, the Wii for the first time, and he's playing Wii tennis. He's just trying to hit a winner every time. I see what you're saying.
It's hell. I hate it, honestly. It's not good for tennis, but it is good for Canadian tennis.
No, he is very good for Canadian tennis. Yeah. I'll give him that.
But, I mean, now people have a new hobby horse with Bouchard, and I think that she is a better player than Raonic. The thing that I look at, I agree with you fully, is that, yeah, when you watch Raonic, he's not like Murray. He has no touch near the net, right? I mean, there's guys who have touch, and that differentiates them, and that'll probably hold him back a lot.
Actually, you know, his volleying ability is actually pretty good, and it better be, because that's, you know, the basis of his game. He wants to serve and volley every single point. but yeah, he doesn't have that, like, he doesn't have that soft touch, right? Like that feel that you see Nadal hit those crazy volleys that go across the entire court, and somehow, you know, they're just mind boggling.
Yeah. So yeah, he needs to expand his game before he makes a semifinal.
No, he needs a ground game is what he needs. He needs to be able to stand on the baseline and just hit back and forth, you know?
Right. Hopefully it will come with time. How old is Raonic?
Something like 23,
24. 24, yeah. Okay, so he's still... I mean, he's getting there, but...
Yeah, that's like in your prime for tennis players, though, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think Raonic is ever going to reach number one.
No.
And I'll be surprised if he wins a major, because there's just, like, these top four guys or top three guys in the world, they just have a much more all-around game than he has.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I don't think he'll ever have it.
And looking forward, this is interesting. I just pulled this up. The Wimbledon to win outright right now. Djokovic is the favorite, obviously. Second is Andy Murray over Rafa Nadal.
Yeah.
Is that home court advantage they're thinking? Or do they think...
Well, they are definitely thinking home court advantage. Yeah, they want him to follow up on that, on his last Wimbledon championship. But is it true? Is it true odds? I don't know. I think
I wouldn't say so. They have Nadal at 5-1 and Federer at 5-1 going into Wimbledon right now. Obviously, we're a month away, but
yeah. Well, you know, that's not bad. Nadal isn't, you know, he isn't the favorite on the grass. That's for sure, right?
Yeah. So
it'll be interesting. Where's Stanislav Wawrinka and all that?
He's next up at 11-1.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a factor at Wimbledon, actually.
Yeah, well, there you go. So. Yeah. There's your month.
Milos on that draw is at 81, I think. So.
yeah, behind, a lot. Perfect. Well, that's our French Open coverage. That's more in-depth than Dan and I have ever gotten.
Oh, God, I know, right? This is what I'm talking about, cachet.
Cachet, right.
That's what I was talking about.
We'd love to have you back, maybe again during the French Open, if not... Wimbledon, Canucks, hockey, whatever you'd like.
You guys let me know.
That'd be perfect.
I'm just sitting here in Toronto doing nothing.
Duly noted. We'll call you up tomorrow then. We'll bug the shit out of you every day.
We actually will get you back at the end of this to do our infamous buzzer beater. Everyone in Twitter is talking about our buzzer beater.
I know. Hashtag buzzer beater. It's trending. In the Almeida household.
In my house.
I'll just sit here quietly then for now.
Perfect. We'll get you back at the end to do the buzzer beater.
Paul, I'm going to ask you about the Indiana Pacers-Miami Heat game from last night, because I know you got a beef about something from the game last night.
Listen, we all know I'm a Miami Heat fan because of basically because my friends who are Miami Heat fans. That's the only reason.
Bandwagon. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Bless you. But I will say this, because when I get on board, I'm getting on board, and I'm trying to get on board with the Miami Heat. LeBron James, down 12 seconds left, has the isolation and a chance to drive to the hoop, take a game-winning three, whatever you need to do. He refuses to take that last shot still, drives to the bucket, kicks it out to Chris Bosh for a three? What? Who does that? I mean,
CB4.
I know he's hit them before, but he's not Robert Horry. LeBron was in foul trouble all game. He had more fouls than points at the end of the first half. They were somehow still leading by 9 after 2 quarters, but that caught up to him. LeBron scores a game low or a playoff low 7 points, ends with 5 fouls. I don't understand why he doesn't take that last shot still. It baffles me. He could have shot free throws to put the game to overtime.
Oh, Bron. But he'll be back in either Game 6 or Game 7 to push them through, I would imagine.
Yes, I would think so.
All right. Well, we're not going to have a chance to talk about baseball or the Blue Jays, who are on a 9-game winning streak.
Unbelievable.
So, I know, it's unbelievable right now. We are going to go to our usual World Cup segment, and today we are talking about Group E. And Group E features 16th-ranked France, 8th-ranked Switzerland, 28th-ranked Ecuador, and the small little nation of Honduras, which is actually 30th-ranked in the world.
I think Group E stands for exceptional.
I think E stands for early exit in the elimination rounds. That's like three E's. That was perfect.
Group E stands for eliminated early.
Yes, that's good. I like that. But in all seriousness, Bet365 odds right now for the group. Paul, why don't you regale the people with what they're at right now?
Well, Dan, I'll tell you. France is at 1.66. Switzerland, this is to win the group. Switzerland at 3.75. Ecuador at 5 even, and Honduras at 34-1.
34 odds for Honduras right now. Now, people are going to look at, I mean, speaking of cachet, because that's our word of the day.
Is that the name of the episode?
It's the cachet cast. France obviously has a lot of name recognition because of 1998, 2006, you know, everything that they did in their golden era, and they do still have a strong team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're led by guys like Ribéry and Karim Benzema, and you know, there's every reason to, and they have a strong defense, there's every reason to think that they could well win this group. But I look back at how poor they performed with this same core at both Euro 2012 and at the 2010 World Cup, and I have to wonder about them. I mean, they seem like the kind of team that just can't bring all this individual talent they have in their squad together to play cohesive team football. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know much about France football, to be honest. Mm. But I know they underperformed at Euro, and I know they underperformed at the last World Cup. Will they win this or come close? No. But will they get out of the group? Yes. You bet 365 to qualify has them at 1.2.
Okay.
You got to think France is the favorite out of the group still. Well, I mean, that France-Switzerland match might determine everything, but you got to...
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, on team ranking, Switzerland is the 8th-ranked team in the world, and that probably surprises a lot of people because in terms of household names, I mean, Switzerland has... I'm trying to think of, you know, our casual listeners probably won't really know any of the guys that Switzerland plays on a consistent basis. Maybe Gerard and Shaqiri from Bayern Munich, but that's about it.
Well, they have Josip Drmić as their top team goal scorer favorite. And then after that, Haris Seferovic. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And these are guys who are just, I mean, unless you're a serious observer of the German league, or in Haris Seferovic's case, a minor team in the Spanish league, you're not going to know these guys, but they play, you know, cohesive team football. I respect Switzerland. I respect the chances they have as a team to qualify. I do like France to win this group. I like Switzerland as the two team. They're going to get a challenge from Ecuador. Ecuador, I mean, they're anchored by Antonio Valencia from Manchester United. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the player through which most of their offense flows. They also have Christian Noboa from Dynamo Moscow, but he doesn't play often with them. Other than that, they're a team that is full of guys who play in Central America. So these aren't guys who necessarily are going to be used to playing on a big stage against the best players in the world.
Mm-hmm. Do the Central and South American teams in this group stand a chance?
I mean, Ecuador stands a chance. If they can pull one out against Switzerland, say like a 1-0 defeat of Switzerland, then I like them to be the number two team to qualify. Honduras, I mean, look, Honduras was here. They were in this. They were in the World Cup last, I think, in 2010, and they had a relatively poor showing. They went 0-1-2. Ecuador hasn't qualified for the World Cup since 2006. But when they did qualify in 2006, they actually made it out of their group to the round of 16 before they lost, I believe it was to Germany. So Ecuador stands an outside chance to qualify in that two spot. And if they can surprise either France or Switzerland with a draw or a win, then that will really help them. But I do think that the two European teams are probably the undeniable favorites in this group.
Right. So let's talk about Honduras is the third or second favorite for the lowest scoring team in the tournament.
That seems fair. I mean, there's some defensive teams that are going up against the French and the Swiss. Both have solid defenses, goaltending, and defensive systems. So I could conceivably see Honduras scoring zero goals or one goal in this tournament. What are the odds for that?
6-1. Australia is the favorite for lowest scoring team at 5-1. Then yeah. Honduras and Costa Rica at 6-1.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's that's going to be a battle for the bottom. Australia is in a harder group, but I don't know. I mean, Honduras, I'm trying to think. Who's Honduras' top goal scorer on 365 right now? Who do they have?
God, hold on. Let me pull it up.
It's probably Wilson Palacios, who plays for Stoke City in the EPL, but I mean, it doesn't matter.
Carlos Costley.
Yeah, I have no idea who that is.
Who did you say?
Wilson Palacios, he plays for Stoke.
Wilson Palacios is 21-1.
Well, put money on Wilson Palacios to score their only goal. He's their best player.
There you go.
No, I'm just joking. But no, I don't think Honduras stands much of a chance in this at all. Which is something that we will actually reflect on more in our preview show. Woo-hoo. Paul, you want to tell the folks about our big preview extravaganza we got coming up?
June 9th. It's on June 9th. We are going to go through World Cup stuff all day. It's going to be great. We're going to lose a lot of money.
Yep.
And then gain it back at the end, obviously. Yep. Duh.
Obviously. Betting on Honduras to win the group, naturally. Woo, woo,
woo. No, it's going to be good. Hey, we didn't tell folks the name of our podcast and the email and my Twitter and your Twitter.
Yeah, we're not very good at hyping ourselves up. Before we transition back and bring our friend Omar back in, we should tell you that the DP Sports Podcast, which today I believe we're calling the Cache Cast.
Yeah, the Cache Cast.
The Cache Cast. All right, good. We're at dpsportspodcast@gmail.com. I'm Dan McDonald at Dan the Max, MACS on Twitter.
I'm Paul Almeida, Paul Almeida 22. If you don't know how to spell it, it'll be on some website somewhere.
You don't know how to spell it. It's P-A-U-L.
Yeah, that's it. And then 2-2. But this episode is really, we pimped Omar out more than we pimped ourselves out, which is fine. Whatever. I'm not jealous.
That's the point. No.
I'm not mad.
And no, I think we should bring him back in.
Let's bring him back in. We're going to do our world-famous buzzer beater. This has taken a turn since we left Elmar.
We make Derek Fisher buzzer beaters look like chumps play, man. Seriously.
So this is how this works. We usually ask each other 10 questions, but because we have our special world famous guest, we're going to...
Everything's world famous with you.
Listen,
right,
Kay, this is a very important thing, and it's world famous.
Well, people in Toronto have heard of it.
Perfect.
How about that?
Oh,
meaning me.
There you go.
I feel
we're across. That's right. Meaning Omar. We're continent to continent, and people in Scotland have heard of it because I yell it out my window.
Oh, we are world famous.
There's
no doubt.
Technically, that's the world.
I agree. So I'm going to ask five. Well, Dan and I are going to alternate. We're going to ask five questions. You have either one word or one sentence to respond to them as quick as possible. Are you ready?
Ready.
And if you don't do it in a sufficient amount of time, you have to spell Darren Detition's last name live right now. Here we go. Dan, you're up first. Ready?
All right, and go. Omar, who's your favorite for the Conn Smythe right now?
Oh, man, that's tough. Go with Patrick Kane.
Oof. When is the better time to be a sports fan? Now with the NHL and NBA playoffs, baseball and tennis majors, or in October with the NHL and NBA starting, NFL in full swing, and the baseball playoffs?
Definitely now. We need the NHL playoffs.
All right, Omar. Are those Rogers Arena spotlights that hot, or are Canucks general managers just generally really sweaty guys?
I think it's a prerequisite when you hire a Canucks GM that he has to sweat a lot and that he has to go through two bottles of water per press conference.
Mm-hmm. Apparently the hydration one.
If you're the Canucks GM, would you use the word rebuild, retool, or would you desperately try to convince everyone that the window is still open?
That's tough. No. To demolish the whole team and rebuild it from the ground up. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Fair enough.
That's a bad answer.
No, it's not. That's a good answer because that's the right answer.
That is the right answer.
Give me one player who isn't on the Canucks right now, be it a prospect, a UFA, or a guy you expect to acquire through trade, who will be in the lineup at the start of next season.
Matt Molson.
Molson, okay.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Number three for me, what is the better French Open name? Is it Jack Sock, Yann Leonard Struff, or Maria Teresa Toroflor?
I haven't heard of any of them. No, I've heard of Jack Sock, but who are these other people?
They're apparently in the draw. I don't know.
They're long, long odds people in the draw.
I'm going to have to look that up after and verify.
Okay, that they're real people?
I think you made it up.
Listen, Dan and I have been on the Jack Sock bandwagon from day one, and he has won three matches or two matches or something.
I want to meet the parents of, you know, who named their child Jack Sock. Just being real. All right, Omar, where will Eugenie Bouchard finish in the French Open?
Oh, Eugenie, number one in our hearts.
My boy! Yes, Omar, you're definitely allowed back on the podcast.
No, are we all members of Jeannie's army or what?
Well, of course.
Definitely, yeah. She's going to win. What do you think?
Let's go.
Yes.
I'd like to hear that. But now we're going to have to hashtag Jeannie's army in this because we're just talking her up.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Number four for me. What or who is your favorite Boston model? Peter Chiarelli's, Mark Wahlberg, or Matt Damon?
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg is just, yeah, he's a model, isn't he? He's amazing.
and a rapper.
I'm taking a while to put this all together. Okay, Marky Mark.
Yes.
Funky Bunch.
That's my boy.
Good vibrations. All right, and my Whitecaps question for you. Who has been the most impressive player for you on the Whitecaps this season?
That goal by Hurtado last week. Did you see that thing? He went through the entire team. And then,
yeah.
I mean, that move at the end, and then he goes bar down. I mean, oh.
Yeah.
I'm still in disbelief that he scored that goal.
Yeah.
Him and Kakuta Mane are really a solid duo for that team.
Yeah, it's a fun team to watch right now, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
All right, and here's our 10th and last question. For the next 12 years, what are you most excited about for Sportsnet hockey coverage? Is it A, Kiprios and McLean arguing like seven-year-olds? B, George Strombolopoulos trying to punk up Hockey Night in Canada coverage? C, Sportsnet trying to convince us that Ivanka Osmak and Hazel May are better than Jennifer Hedger and Kate Burness? Or D, I'm just going to get drunk every night and hopefully not remember anything they say?
I'm excited to see Strombo sit back in his recliner, like his one-person couch, and have his leg crossed and, you know, his big boots, leather boots or whatever he wears, and all these rings and jewelry and spiky hair, and just, you know, like try to interview a hockey player like that. And it'll be interesting seeing his transition from, like, you know, pop culture into hockey and him trying to make it cool and stuff. And
Just see him interviewing like Shea Weber and be like, "All right, say it, Shea. So, have you heard of Black Flag?"
that'll be really entertaining, I think.
Oh my God,
yeah, definitely. Oh. All right, Omar. Well, we appreciate you being on here, my friend. At Omar Canuck is his Twitter handle, and we will hope to have him back on sometime in the future, be he out in Toronto, in Vancouver, or elsewhere around the world.
Thank you guys. I'll be back in Vancouver in like 3 days.
Okay.
We're gonna go on a world tour with this podcast. I think that's what we decided, though.
Well, it's because it's world famous.
Yes. But before we embark on this world tour, we'll be back on Saturday to do episode 7 of our podcast, where Wyatt, or The Stanchion on Twitter, joins us to talk some hockey, probably Canucks because he is a Canuck analyst. And whatever he feels like. And we're going to have some hard-hitting buzzer-beater questions for him, too. So, until then, see you on Saturday.